League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
No one warned us. No one said you were going to lose both engines at a lower altitude than any jet in history.
Simulations showed that you could make it back to the airport.
Not possible. I felt it go.
From director Clint Eastwood, critics are calling it a triumph. 5 stars.
Brace for impact.
What if I didn't get this wrong? What if I endangered the lives of all those passengers?
People call you a hero.
I don't feel like a hero.
Sully, Miracle on the Hudson. In cinemas December 2nd. Certificate 12A.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the Tottenham Way podcast. I'm Dan Kilpatrick. Tom is not here, sadly. Regular listeners will know Tom normally presents the show, but I'm actually on the way back from Dortmund. I'm with Rich Arrowsmith, friend of the show. Hello, Rich.
Hello.
It's your third appearance on the pod?
Number four.
Unbelievable. Also got a couple of debutants. To Trunk is with me. Jack, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. How you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. And we're also joined by Charlotte.
Hi.
Hello.
I just got to say quick, Dan, I thought we had agreed that it's going to be like,
Sorry, mate. This is a very special episode of Rule the Tottenham Roost Way podcast. Because as some of you
needs
will know,
a bit of work, that,
Jack
doesn't it?
Does the Rule the Woost podcast. The second best Spurs podcast available. We've all been to Dortmund. We on the way back, we've driven back. Rich very kindly drove, so let's go straight into the match. I think the obvious place to start is probably the lineups. But before we talk about the team, can I just go back to when the tie was made, when the draw was made, and ask you all one by one what you expected from the game back then, back a couple of weeks ago. So, Rich, if you just get us going.
Yeah, I thought this would be the focus of the week or the fortnight ahead. I thought we'd arguably rest against Villa and Bournemouth, and I was horrendously wrong. I got it completely wrong around, and when the team news came out last night, I was a bit disappointed, but in reflection, I'm kind of okay with it because I see what he's doing, but yeah, I was a bit...
But when Spurs... Cause I think sort of context is important because, let's face it, we're essentially out. But when the team, when we were drawn, when the draw was made, I just thought we're probably going to lose that.
Yeah.
And nothing's changed in that respect.
No, and even before anything happened yesterday, I was predicting a 3-1 defeat, and I thought we'd lose. It'd just be a case of if we can just stay in it and go back to the lane with something, we'd be in a good shape.
Yeah. Jack?
I kind of saw this fixture as dessert. That's what I called it to Spook when I was talking to him the other day on Twitter. That it was a nice... I didn't expect us to win. I thought this is it. This is the end of our Europa kind of challenge. It'd be lovely if we beat a team like Dortmund, but they're a step ahead of anything else we've played this season. And if we get the chance to give the likes of Kane, Ali, Dyer... Well, Ali suspended, but some of our better players a chance to experience that kind of Champions League football before next season, fingers crossed. It would have been a great season to, well, a great opportunity to take. More about the experience and stuff, and if we get a result.
Yeah. Great. Charlotte, how did you see the draw?
I saw it as the hardest fixture and went into it kind of with minimal expectations, but at the same time, my expectation was that we'd go for it, you know, and then suddenly seeing the team sheet, I suddenly realised we weren't especially going for it.
Yeah, because I think the way I saw it at the time, and some people were saying this on Twitter that I saw, was that it was kind of a win-win situation for Spurs. It was like, if we go to Dortmund and get a really good result, or if we beat them in the tie, then the whole of Europe's going to sit up and take notice of Tottenham, Pochettino's Tottenham, and say, like, right, we're back. If we lose, and there's no shame in losing, then we can just focus on the league.
Yeah.
So for me, that's why nothing's really changed in that respect. Yes, it was a drubbing, and you're always going to have awkward questions after a drubbing, but we were never really expected to win this game. The team, though, that was seven changes from Arsenal. Two enforced. Ali is suspended. Dier's actually injured. Pochettino said that last night. But otherwise, a lot of changes. No Kane, no Lamella, no Walker. Changed the fullbacks as usual. Mason and Carroll in centre midfield. Onuma starting his fourth game. What did everyone think? Where were you when you found out the team? Were you still boozing in Market Square or whatever it was?
Wankers, I think.
We were in Wankers. Yeah. Actually, shout out to Wankers.
Wankers
quality Wankers. Schnitzel and beer. Mm. I'm very impressed with Wankers.
And a banterous name.
Yeah. were you in Wankers when you saw the team?
We were in the Market Square.
We were in and around Wankers.
What was the atmosphere like? Were people pissed off around you?
I think everyone
especially
seemed...
Especially the ones kicking the football around.
Everyone seemed pretty disappointed. And to be honest, I was pretty gutted. But on the kind of reflection after the game, it's the same side he put out against Fiorentina. I can understand people saying that Dortmund is a bigger test, but you know he's consistent. He's stuck to the fact that he wants to focus on the league, and it's not nice to take a drubbing, and it would have been nice to see us play against a team like Dortmund. But I was pissed off, and I'm not going to act like I wasn't, but I can understand it.
That's an important point though, because for all the people saying that Pochettino got it wrong or that he's an idiot today, we're probably the same people saying he's a genius or he's got it right against Fiorentina, which was essentially exactly the same 11. And they, you know, Dortmund are second in the Bundesliga, Fiorentina were third in the Serie A. So he's not been inconsistent with this team.
No.
He's played the same team that got us through the last round.
I don't really buy that he's thrown it, per se. You know, I don't think he's consciously said, I'm going to throw it. I think he's obviously conscious of the fact that it is a weakened 11, but...
He can't say with a straight face anymore that he's prioritised both competitions, though.
No, my feeling is, though, it's, you know, Pochettino's doing such a good job. He's steering us in an extremely good direction at the moment. And, you know, I'm reluctant to question his motives. We're not there. We're speculating on, you know, on the internet or whatever, but we're not there with the players in training. You don't know. It could be a case that he was thinking of fielding a stronger side, but they were all knackered and we're in biting distance of winning the Premier League, and he just thought it's just not worth tiring them out and then losing some crucial fixtures in the Premier League as a result.
So he plays our best 11 and loses to Villa, then he's going to get vilified for that.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
No pun intended.
That would be vilified.
Vilified for losing to Villa.
And as I said it earlier, but if Spurs draw at Aston Villa, that is the equivalent of a heavy defeat to pretty much anyone else in the Premier League.
It would be horrendous.
And for morale, on the back of the week we had with Arsenal and West Ham before that, I think it's really, really important to beat Villa, probably more so than getting anything from the Dortmund game.
Definitely. Yeah.
And I thought the team we had last night could have beaten Villa, and which is why I was a little bit disappointed to see Dembele, Kane and Lamella all on the bench. I think Onuma with Chadley up top could have probably beaten Villa, whereas...
Yeah, I don't disagree, but it's about taking that risk, isn't it?
Also, in hindsight, because, you know, I think it's fairly safe to say at this point, you know, we're very likely to get Champions League football next year. I'm tiptoeing around it, but it's pretty, you know, we're pretty confident we're going to get top four. And so this experience for those young players in Europe under slightly less pressure is some, you know, a good thing. Josh Onuma got 90 minutes against Dortmund. You know, that's a seriously good experience for our young players.
He was all right. And given the occasion, he played quite well.
Let's take the opportunity to talk about Onuma, because my impression of him was that he was one of Spurs' most positive and brightest players, but he really left Trippier. He didn't really know how to defend properly against Dortmund, who are a formidable attacking side. Mm. And he really left Trippier exposed. And it wasn't really a big surprise when they scored the opener from a cross from the left.
Yeah.
Because Trippier was getting doubled up on quite frequently. But what did everyone else think of Onuma?
I thought it was solid.
His fourth start. He's 18. Yeah. I mean, that's a big game for him to go into.
And crucially, he didn't seem to shy away. Sorry, someone's
motorbike seen him.
Really wants to get on this.
Someone's jumped in their motor and they're after him.
No, Onuma didn't shy away from the occasion, and he was I think he can be pleased with his performance.
I think his naivety as a player comes through, but he's up against, you know, a seriously clinical opposition. Yeah. You know,
they are ridiculous.
Veterans in Europe, second in the Bundesliga, a team that will find your weakness and destroy it. And Josh Onuma, you know, he's an inexperienced player, and that was bound to happen.
And they found that weakness, didn't they? They found Onuma and Trippier out
with clinical precision. Yeah, they early did, on. And they exposed it and took advantage of it. But that was bound to happen. But I still think for our young players, that's a great experience, because we are going to be in the Champions League next year. Woo. And and you know, this is a lot less, you know, a lot lower stakes to be, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. There's every chance Spurs could play Dortmund again in the group stage next year and need to win in Germany, and we'll be better off for the experience. Overall impressions of the game, of Spurs' performance?
It was limp, wasn't it, really? Let's be honest, it was pretty limp.
I personally, considering the lineup, thought we held on pretty well for the first half hour. I thought, you know, decent. I actually thought we were going to crumble much sooner. And
I suppose that says a lot, doesn't it, that we're...
We never had a foothold in the game. Like, it was so frustrating to watch.
We were on
like,
the back foot
we
entirely.
We lost nearly every midfield battle in the first half. Like, there was nothing purposeful about anything. We were just an also-ran. We didn't bring anything to it.
Yeah, but I think, you know, that was a very strong side they fielded.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a strong side we fielded. And I think, you know, they can be proud of their performance. Obviously, they're nowhere near the standard of a first-team Dortmund, but... They did well for what they are. This wasn't our first team. And, you know, I think, yes, they lost 3-0, but they lost 3-0 to an excellent...
Yeah, it's worth pointing out that Dortmund had a full... With the exception of Gundogan, who was apparently injured, and the goalkeeper who they rotated, they had their best 11 on the field.
Yeah.
And they were incredible. It was like a cat with a mouse at times, just sort of thinking, oh, we could let you out now, we'll just actually catch you and just bring the ball back here and we'll have it again.
Yeah.
It was exceptional, really.
No, comfortable.
I mean, it was one of those games where one team looks like they have space. Every player looks like he has space every time he gets the ball. And the other team looks like they have absolutely no space every time, on the few occasions they do get the ball. I mean, Mkhitaryan, however you pronounce it, just looked like he had 5 minutes to pick a pass every time. Royce was the same. And by contrast, every time Eriksen got on the ball or Chadli got on the ball, he was just crowded out by three or four yellow shirts.
Yeah, I was going to say Dortmund kept their width so well, and their runners in the middle just opened back even wider. So the amount of times I'd have runners coming through the middle, and then all of a sudden the winger and the fullback would be 2-on-1 on either Davies or Trippier was quite incredible, really.
I think one thing that really struck me as well is the fact that even though they were the dominant team by far, they were still even coached in the art of counter-attacking also. And they were obviously drilled in hitting us on the counter. So it was relentless pressure. Even those like slight moments, we had the odd kind of break. Son had a few meaningful runs. Eriksen had I think he had one or two shots in the first half. But every time we got anywhere near or into their half, they would just hit us on the counter. And it's the way they countered. They were so structured in the way they played. I often find with English teams in particular, when an English team plays on the counter, it is a case of chucking bodies forwards, people running forwards and hoping to get on the end of something. With these guys, there was always purpose. It looked like they kind of moved up in these blocks of four, whereby they always had space for one another and they were always providing a pass for someone else. And that happened, like the way they overlapped for us was what we're aspiring to be, I think, in particular. And so I don't know, that was decent.
I don't know what you guys thought about this, but in terms of the width, obviously it's their home pitch, so they're well suited to it, but their pitch was very square. It was a very wide pitch, and we seemed extremely narrow on it, but I just wonder whether that's because, you know, it's their pitch and it was extremely wide. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's pitch size has actually been talked about quite a lot recently. Like Danny Rose did an interview, I think, after the Swansea game where he said Spurs are kind of struggling to break down teams at White Hart Lane because it's quite a narrow pitch and it's not a very big pitch, and it means that it's harder to get in behind teams like Swansea and like Watford a few weeks before that, who just come to White Hart Lane and sit very deep. And I think it's like I said in the first half, Dortmund just looked like they had space every time they were on the ball, and it might be to do with the fact that they were playing on a very big home pitch. We've kind of touched on selection, but I wanted to just go over a couple of the individual selections Pochettino made. The first one, the biggest talking point probably, was Chadli up front. I suppose once Kane was going to be rested, once Poch had made that call, it was either Chadli or Son. He changed at half time and put Son up front. Do you think he maybe got that wrong and it should have been Son from the start? Anyone?
It's much of a muchness between the two for me. I think it's too hard to say. We haven't seen enough of either of them in that position really to make a definitive call. I'm always a bit dubious of Chadli from the start. I think he's a bit of a classic impact sub for us. He always seems to do well off of the bench. I know we kind of make a joke like all he does is score goals, but I'm yet to kind of... It's great, obviously he adds a lot of value to the team, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of Chadli, but I've never been that convinced from him as a starter, to be honest. Although he did completely smash Arsenal earlier on in the year, didn't he, at the Emirates? Which gives him a
free pass.
Yeah.
He really struggled to hold up the ball, I think, and link the play. And the contrast was obviously there with Aubameyang, who is a world-class striker, and I think obviously he's Dortmund's first choice striker, and we've got Kane, but it really kind of highlighted our deficiencies in that department, seeing him kind of run Tottenham ragged, I thought. The other call, I suppose, was Mason alongside Carroll. That didn't really work for me. They're not suited to play beside each other, are they, Rich?
No, it didn't work. We were sort of discussing this, I can't remember if it was last night or this morning, where we were saying they kind of needed a Dier figure alongside him, which you could probably say for every midfielder except Dier, where you just sort of need that guy you know will sit and mop up anything for the other guy to express himself a bit more. And I think neither of them did that for each other.
But Benteleb seems to be the most obvious replacement, but he's out of favour, so I suppose Pochettino didn't have a great deal of choice.
No. Could argue we're one short there.
Yeah, it certainly seemed to be.
I definitely agree with all that. I think the one thing I was disappointed with, sorry Rosa, with Mason, however, is that he does have combative qualities. I don't think he showed them at all last night. I think he completely shrunk in the occasion, I feel, personally. And I don't know. I think Tom Carroll got quite a lot of stick. I actually think Tom Carroll did an all right job. Considering he had no one really around him to shield him or to help him at all, and you know he's going to need that. He's not the most physical player, but he is a fairly adept, like a technical player, and he can get the ball moving forwards. And it almost felt like he was having to do kind of the job of getting stuck in and also playing the ball forwards as well, where Mason just kind of didn't ever really look like he found his rhythm in the game.
Yeah, the other thing I just want to touch on, something we talked about last night, Jack, was we were saying how about a month ago we got into the... We started to think that there was nothing between Spurs' two sets of fullbacks, and that there was nothing between Walker and Trippier, and nothing between Rose and Davis. But last night kind of suggested that there really is, and we really missed Rose and Davis, didn't we?
Yeah.
Sorry, Rose and Walker.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that completely.
I don't know if last night was a fair yardstick to measure it. It's
but there are second choices is what I'm getting at, and we might have.
Yeah.
We missed. I feel like we missed maybe the pace, battling qualities of those two.
It's the tenacity that they both have, I think. Like in terms of, there are a lot of comparable qualities between the four of the players.
But I think where Rose and Walker really set themselves apart is pace. That's a big thing. Both those lads have a lot of pace, and that's not something we have a lot of in our team, really. Mm. It's still one of the big things lacking from our team. And I think that's one of the things Dortmund had over us last night. They have pace in abundance throughout that squad, and that really showed last night. And I'm not, like, reducing their kind of advantage just down to, like, a physical, because it wasn't. But at the same time, like, it was a big point.
It definitely helped.
Yeah, exactly, right, especially on the break. But just Rose and Walker, they just seem... I know this is an accidental Sherwood. They're a bit more ballsy, I think, than Trippier and Davis. And sometimes in those kind of fixtures, you need that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to single him out, but I kind of am by saying this. There was a moment, it might have even been in added time at the end, where the ball came to Trippier, really advanced position, and it was the first chance where he'd actually been able to just find a decent ball.
Yeah.
And I think he just fluffed his lines and skied it behind the net. And
yeah, he shanked across.
Yeah, and it's
straight
kind
of
like,
play.
You can't afford to let those opportunities slip.
Yeah, especially as he is the kind of, that's his thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Crossing.
If you had picked anyone to put that ball in, you'd have probably picked him.
Yeah. Before we go on to the whole occasion and the trouble the fans had getting into the stadium, let's just talk about the second leg. It's quite a tough balancing act now, I think, for Pochettino, because the tie is gone. We're not going to recover that and qualify for the quarterfinals. It's over. But at the same time, we don't really want to lose 3-0 again at home. That would really damage morale, and you just never want a drubbing. So Pochettino's got a bit of a balancing act between restoring some pride and keeping that game competitive, because he wants to win every game. That's the way he approaches management. A balancing act between that and keeping our key players fresh and avoiding injuries. How do you think he's going to play it?
Personally, I think he's going to be relatively consistent. He's going to play that same side that he played Fiorentina and Dortmund. I think he's going to let them see it through. It will be, in all likelihood, the last game in Europe this season. And I think fair enough, you know, give them that bit more exposure to it. I think let them see it through to the end, and that keeps, you know, our first team completely fresh, really.
And gives them a chance to put it right as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can make the argument, you play Alderweireld in an essentially meaningless game, he gets an injury, and Pock's going to take all kind of flack.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's Carter Vickers, isn't it, really? That's the only other option.
An 18-year-old against...
Yeah.
Borussia Dortmund, it could get messy. It's a difficult one. I think.
Drop Dier, but...
Yeah, I think Charlotte's right. I think he'll probably stick with the same team. It'll probably be Kane back on the bench. And as much as I don't want to tempt fate, we have been fortunate in that we've got Villa and Bournemouth as the games following the Dortmund legs. And as Premier League games go, they're not the hardest. Let's talk a little bit about the experience of the whole day, because in some respects that is more important than the actual football. I know that's easy to say now, we've just lost 3-0, but it's a European away trip. It's about the time you have as well as just the 90 minutes of the game. Unfortunately, I was working, so I spent most of the day wandering around people who were getting very pissed and feeling quite jealous. What did you guys make of the pre-match atmosphere? What was the mood like? What were you doing? How was it?
Loads of beer and banter, wasn't it, Les?
Little talk.
We all, Tottenham as a massive, basically, seemed to all gather in this one particular square, and they sort of took it over.
What was
in
it,
terms
the Altplatz?
Something like that.
Market or something.
The old market, basically. And all... The square itself, as well as all the bars around it, were packed full of Spurs fans. It was a pretty good atmosphere. There didn't seem to be a very heavy police presence, and the locals seemed, you know, pretty relaxed about the whole thing, even though, you know, some would argue we were being a little bit disorderly. We were kicking loads of balls around, and it was kind of...
smoke.
letting off a couple of smoke.
I saw a couple of flares go off.
Yeah.
Someone let off a red one at one point. There was a white one, a blue one. Everyone's like, you know me. And then this red one came out of nowhere. And there's a big boom.
It wasn't the best choice.
Everyone around, no.
Well deserved, though, really.
Yeah, completely.
But yeah, it was a good atmosphere, really good. Everyone seemed to be having a good time, and yeah, no aggro really.
Mm. Some of those fucking balls being kicked around.
I was living in fear of those balls.
Yeah. One of them hit me on the arm, but as long as it wasn't my face or my beer, I was alright. Yeah. Really.
I saw a couple of guys. There were a couple of people that got phone and beer taken out of their hand in one movement.
See, that's a disaster.
It's a no swearing pod, this one, isn't it?
It's meant to be, but if it's editorially justifiable, you're allowed to swear, and that definitely was.
I am a proper gazer, so that's editorial.
Exactly, mate. So you headed to the game. There was a lot of trouble getting into the game. That's been fairly well documented now. Spurs have released a statement today. I know that Dortmund have released a statement. The police have released a statement, I think. As far as I know, some Spurs fans were tear gassed, a couple of Spurs fans were injured. I think that's just from the tear gas, but also in kind of minor scuffles with stewards and police. Some Spurs fans didn't get into the stadium for at least half an hour, so just in time to see Dortmund take the lead. One of them was my cousin, who I was at the game with, and he was basically kept outside a metal gate for 27 minutes. That's how long it took him to get in, and obviously by the time he did, he was pretty pissed off. How did you guys find getting into the game? What was your experience, and what did you hear from other fans?
Well, getting to the game itself was fine. We literally rocked down onto the nearest tube from that square. Dortmund and Spurs fans sort of all going along together, all got out of the stadium all together, walked down to the stadium, and then we sort of went round to the away section. And there was quite a large crowd already. This time it was about 6:15, so 45 minutes before kickoff. There was quite a large group of Spurs fans trying to get into the away end. Probably about 30 people wide and about 10 people deep. And that was with like 45 minutes to go. And we got through with no problems. Sort of, we were quickly searched and then told to go into the crowd. But then I think it was later on, close to kickoff, about between 7:30 and 7:15, where the actual trouble started.
We heard that the problem was caused by the police escort itself, because they steered the Spurs fans to the wrong gate en masse, and then they had to steer them somewhere else, and it became a bit of a nightmare. Basically, they were steering through a very narrow way where there were lots of people, and it just caused a lot of problems, is what we heard.
Do you think it affected the atmosphere? Because when I spoke to my cousin, he said when he got into the ground there was still lots of empty seats, and that was on 27 minutes. He was obviously pissed off. A lot of the fans around him had experienced something similar. They were quite pissed off. I've got to say, from where I was sitting in the press box, I was looking to my right, and I thought the atmosphere, I don't want to criticise Spurs fans, but it wasn't what I expected from Spurs fans in Dortmund. I thought that regardless of what happened on the pitch, it would be 90 minutes of singing your hearts out, everywhere we go, Owen the Spurs, and it seemed like the singing was a bit disjointed, and I wonder whether that was a result of the fact that some people weren't in, or just the fact that people had a really bad experience trying to get into the ground.
It's hard to say, because I don't think any of it, like Rich has called it, our experience, because we were all together.
Yeah, but what was the atmosphere as good as you hoped?
No, it wasn't, and I think it's probably a combination of those things, in the respect that that obviously hasn't helped. Where I was, so I was up in 75, the highest section, and it was practically empty for the first half hour. Not a lot of people saying, a few of the people that did come through after that were all just kind of talking amongst themselves, all pretty pissed off. That's when I first heard that some issues had happened out the front. But prior to that, quite a few people were, you know, a bit kind of pissed off with what was going on the pitch, because we were so limp. So I think it was just a combination of things. But it was a real shame to hear what had happened, because my personal experience of it was, wow, this is great. It's great to come to actually be an away fan in Europe and feel that the police are actually less oppressive here than the police are for me as a home fan going to Spurs, because I sometimes find that I'm not casting these kind of wild aspersions about policing and so on and so forth. But I do find with policing in the UK, especially with football, it can be quite heavy-handed and aggressive at times. And I found it quite refreshing being away to find that it at least didn't seem to be, but that didn't prove to be the case.
It's a real shame because the rest of the trip, the Dortmund people and fans were so welcoming. Like where I was sat in the ground, I was on the very edge of a Spurs section, literally a barrier, and I was shoulder to shoulder with the Dortmund fans. Literally, we were brushing shoulders the whole game. And after every goal, he sort of turned to me, patted me on my shoulder, and said, "Oh, sorry, mate." And at the end of the game, he shook my hand and said, "Good luck in the league." And
he actually said good luck in the championship.
Sorry, yeah, good luck in the championship. Calling me out.
You should have had him. I think it's a bit patronising.
I mean, I could have had him with my with my frame. But no, on the whole, the Dortmund people were charming and welcoming, and it was a really good atmosphere. It's just a shame about this.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I wasn't wearing colours, Spurs colours, during the day, but I was walking around asking people if they spoke English constantly and not knowing where I was going, and everyone I spoke to was obviously assuming I was there as a fan, and couldn't have been more helpful at the whole. There's a lot of similarities between Spurs and Dortmund. I think young progressive managers, football based on pressing, success, in Spurs' case relative success without spending the most in the league. And it feels like to me that when it comes to the stadium as well, we'd quite like to build a stadium like theirs and an atmosphere like theirs. The big similarity is obviously the single tier stand. They've got the yellow wall. Was being in the stadium, did that kind of whet your appetite for what Spurs are trying to do with the new ground? Did you think the atmosphere was special?
The atmosphere was fantastic. I think it's kind of wishful thinking to think the Tottenham ground will be quite as spectacular as that, and we've kind of decided through a bit of speculation that's because after a quick search we've realised that the only thing to do in Dortmund for fun is go to the football, so we assume
there was not a lot of tourist attractions.
There wasn't much going on, and so we kind of assume that everyone in Dortmund goes to that game pretty much. And you know, at times, you know, as much as I love Spurs and everything, at times it can be hart to get the atmosphere going even at White Hart Lane. And you know, I think that inevitably there's going to be a lot of tourists, and you know, I'm worried that our atmosphere is going to be less like Dortmund's and more like Arsenal's.
But I don't think it's fair.
You can't compare
English football supporting to German. Like, Germans are allowed standing. Their tickets are a lot cheaper.
Everyone was smoking around me. There was just cigarette smoke everywhere.
Yeah. They can drink beer in the stands. Like,
it's less of a nanny culture at the football, isn't it?
Definitely, and that definitely saturates the game. And like you say, the sheer cost means that there's less young people. You know, like we were saying earlier, you don't get groups of 16 to 18 year olds going as friends. They go with their parents because they can't afford to. You know, kids can't afford to really go to the football with their money. We're our age, kind of in your 20s, kind of thing. You're the really.
Thanks.
Sorry, Jack.
Well, apart from you.
You just said our support's gonna be like Arsenal, so you can pipe down.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think hopefully, if we have a bigger stadium, hopefully the cost of tickets will come down a little bit, and that might help to balance things out. And obviously the one-tiered, you know, the wall will be a fantastic feature.
If we can get the whole of Park Lane in that, it'll be a special start.
It was incredible to watch, you know, Dortmund Stadium somewhere, you know, it's one of the big stadiums. Obviously it's one of the ones that's fantastic to visit, and it was great to watch it in action. And I think we'll need to do some sort of jumping up and down kind of movement as well to really, you know, that really is when it came into full effect, when they're not just singing but jumping kind of thing. It really is something to behold.
Yeah. The only thing I will say though, the wall's great. I think everything else apart from the wall wasn't that great though. Like, I think a lot of smoke has blown up their arse as well. Like, the wall was great and it didn't stop jumping, it didn't stop bouncing, but if we're to equate it to White Hart Lane in its current state, on a good day, the Park Lane's incredible. We all know the Park Lane can be incredible.
Yeah.
whereas the Paxton won't be. And if you consider where we were sat in the away end, you know, it was probably the quieter end of the stadium, and as you'd expect from a quieter end of the stadium, it wasn't. So I don't think it's this mythical kind of unerring level of support throughout the entire ground. So
that's true, but I think they put a lot of focus, and it is dramatic, they put a lot of focus on the visual element of their support as well, which is interesting because they, like, you know, 9 out of 10 of their supporters have a scarf and are holding it up, and so many of them are in the yellow, so it's a sea of
yellow.
And
that really stands out, doesn't it? I mean, it's more than, because Spurs go to the games in white, which is our colours, and we wouldn't change that, but it really, when you're sitting there and you're looking at the stadium as a panoramic and you see all this yellow, it's
absolutely.
It is impressive, actually.
It was dramatic.
You're right, that
to
does
look
make
at.
A difference.
And so looking at it, coupled with the fact that, you know, they are a vocal support, it really was, I think, the visual element tied in more than I've ever seen at any other club, and I think it's something to kind of think about, you know, because typically I don't particularly wear colours to games, as, you know, away days more so, but certainly at home I don't particularly. And it was just interesting to see from that perspective that your support can be more than just vocal, you know, visually it was really dramatic.
Yeah, good point. Anyone else got anything to say on Dortmund? If not, we'll move straight on to Jack's dream and wrap it up.
Oh, the chant, I think that you should.
Yeah, we need to nick Dortmund's chant when they go la la
la la la la la. Tottenham Hotspur. La 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 la. Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that one.
You've got to nick that.
Yeah.
All right,
cheers,
Chung,
Dortmund.
Chung, your dream?
So I had a series of bizarre dreams. What do you want?
I just want to caveat it by saying that when Jack woke up, this is just, you know, pre-dream, he woke up and said he had the most horrible dream. And he has some, you know, some real bad ones. So I was expecting something something shocking, basically.
You're looking at me and sniggering. So. Okay, come on then.
Well, I've had a few bizarre dreams that last night, one of which I was just kind of like walking around this weird post-apocalyptic New York landscape at these weird kind of zombie things that were coughing their lungs up. So that was kind of the first part of the dream, the lesser part of it. The second part, for some reason, I don't really know how this happened, but it happened in the dreamscape, that a decider between Tottenham and Leicester had to be played in order to decide where the league title was going to end up.
Could happen. They'd win on head-to-head, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's right.
Carry on.
For some reason, you were put in charge of Tottenham.
Could happen.
Okay. And for Spurs, you picked, like, you had, like, these young cousins. So you were playing, like, 13, 14-year-olds in the team.
That you knew
they were like, and you were kind of being like, yeah, but it's my young cousin, so I want to give him a chance, I want him to play. But then you also played like the Tottenham White guys. So you had like Ollie Lister, you had like Tom
did Foynes play?
Foynes
oh,
was in goal.
My goodness.
Foynes was in goal.
Foynes was in net.
You had Jim in there.
That is horrendous. Yeah. So I take it we lost.
No, but it didn't even get to game. But it wasn't even played at White Hart Lane. It wasn't played at like Filbert Street. It was played just on this random patch of grass with like proper jumpers for goalpost style. It wasn't even a marker to decide how high the shots were going to go. And it was
no goal line
like,
tech.
Well, but I was there and I was just like, damn, mate. Like seriously, like what? I don't want to be a knob here, but what are you actually doing, mate? Like, you realise, like, this is our best chance to win the league in years. And you, like, you were livid with me. You were like, Trunk, mate, like, you know.
Don't interfere. If I want to play Foynes and net, and
yeah,
I want to play
exactly.
my 14-year-old cousins, I will.
You were like, why are you, like, he's 13, 14, mate. He wants to play for Spurs. Like, it's his dream. Why would you, like, what's the problem?
Did you say that
so
way,
when man? you said it was one of the most horrific dreams I've ever had, I take it you meant the zombie bit, not me ruining.
No, it was. It was the latter part. The fate of Tottenham winning the league was put in your hands, and you played.
And you fucked it.
That's it.
Non-throwing quality.
We'll take it from me. I wouldn't do that. I would play Lamella though. Yeah, he'd be starting. Yeah. All right, I think that's all we've got time for on a special edition of Rule the Tottenham Roos podcast. Thanks to Rich Arrowsmith.
Can I just I haven't actually demanded that Dan calls it. I did say
you're on
joke,
record demanding it. we'll edit
I'm
that.
I'm sorry, Seven Raj. Like, I'm
are you gonna get? Are you gonna get told off?
I might get told. I haven't okayed.
Sorry, Seven Raj. It's all right. We'll call it the Tottenham Way podcast. Episode 34. Thanks to Rich Arrowsmith.
Thank you.
Thanks to Chunk. Thanks to Charlotte. Thanks for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.